Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Established in 2010, the Solid Sound Festival kicks off at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts tomorrow evening. The Art and Music Festival is curated by Chicago-based rock band Wilco, and even now they are in the area rehearsing while countless excellent people put the finishing touches on what is sure to be an amazing weekend of eclectic music, eye-popping art, world-class comedy, food, friends, and you guessed it, rain. Just kidding, I mean fun. Wilco will play a special acoustic set on Friday, a plugged-in set on Saturday night, and then Jeff Tweedy's still pretty new band, Tweedy, will play a concert with friends to wrap up the festival on Sunday. Jeff and his son, and skilled drummer, Spencer, formed Tweedy last year and released an album, Suki Ray, in September. Spencer has also played drums on albums produced by Jeff over the last few years, including Mavis Staples' One True Vine. I sat down with Jeff and Spencer in North Adams yesterday and was struck by their congenial and respectful relationship and thrilled to also note some good-natured ribbing. To borrow a Wilco title, they have the whole love. It's contagious and it's cool, just like Solid Sound. Jeff and Spencer, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
What are you looking forward to most at this year's Solid Sound?
It's such an amazing thing to get to be back here doing this again. I honestly feel like I'm looking forward to everything. You know, it's just the whole experience is what I miss when we don't get to do it.
What about you, Spencer? Anything in particular that you're psyched about?
I think, like every year, the lineup is really, really good, and I'm most excited about seeing the bands, but I'm not even sure what all the various activities happening this year are, but I know they're going to be really, really great ones. Yeah.
How is the festival put together? I know it's you, the members of Wilco, some of like family kind of stuff, and then your team. How are the extra activities and everything and the bands chosen and then approached? How does that all come together?
Well, when the festival ends, like 2 years ago, I get right on it. I start working. Basically, we kind of keep a running list of bands we'd like to try and invite, ideas for, you know, art, posters, comedy, you know, just there's a running list that everybody contributes to in the band and in Tony Margherita Management. And I don't know, over 2 years, certain things start to fall away and certain things seem to feel like they're plausible and we pursue whatever is whatever's still available to us at the end of the 2 years, you know.
At this festival, Wilco is playing an acoustic set on Friday night, a sort of normal Wilco set on Saturday night, and then Tweedy, the band that you're both in, is performing with friends on Sunday. Tell me about how the acoustic set developed, why you decided to do that.
Well, playing solo acoustic shows for myself over the years, I've been lucky enough to play in a lot of really nice theaters, and I think it started with me at the end of those shows wanting to see if I could sing into an old theater like that the way that it would have been used as a concert venue when it was built, you know, without a big PA, and it was really invigorating to do that, you know, to feel like I could project enough as a singer into a big room like that and have it be able to put a song across like that. And it always ended up being, I don't know, like the loudest ovation of the evening would usually follow that, because there was something really immediate and interesting about how an audience interacts with something when they have to be even a little bit more quiet. So at some point, when we were doing the shows in December, it was kind of like this residency in December in Chicago, celebrating 20 years. I thought, why don't we try it as a band? Why don't we just go out there? There's really nothing more to do but pick up an instrument and walk towards the front of the stage. And with the whole band, we kind of needed to use the vocal mics that were still there, not sing directly into them, but keep them up so that something is being projected into the audience. And the same thing happened, you know, the connection with the audience got more intense and the reaction would be more intense, and the band got better and better at it, to the point where it felt like, you know, this is really how a band really reminds themselves that they're playing as an ensemble, that we're one instrument. And I don't know, we expanded the repertoire over many, many shows. We'd like do a sound check and go, wonder if we could do this song like this. And eventually, I mean, almost every song that we have in our repertoire, we can do some version of it like this. And so it seemed like a great idea to see if we can put it across in an open field. It's a little scary, not being having to rely upon electricity or whatever, being able to fall back on volume and brute force and ignorance, you know, which is, when you're faced with a big crowd, that sometimes can really help you. But I think it'll go great. If this audience can't take it, then I don't know where we can ever try it again.
I was at the last Wilco Winterlude show in Chicago, and you don't need me to tell you because you know, but that coming downstage it's amazing. It's so impactful, and I think you're right that the audience here is just going to love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's really been a very interesting thing. I've never really, I don't know if I've ever felt that type of connection with an audience since, before we started doing this. I don't know. And as a band, hearing our voices blended together without them coming through the monitors, for me, I hate monitors on stage. I hate everybody living in their own little world on stage. And it's a necessity as a six-piece rock band that everybody can hear what they need to hear. But it tends to make people kind of isolated as a band. And having no monitors really forces everybody to, like, point their ears in the direction they need to hear what they need to hear.
And then, as I mentioned, agree?
Pointing your ears, I think, checks out.
You must have attended the shows in Chicago, so you also know that they were special, and that's where you guys live. And at the show that I was at, your wife was on, like, FaceTime or Skype or something part of it, and you shouted her out and asked everybody to say hi. How's she doing?
She's doing great. And she was really bummed out. That coincided with her recovery from surgery. And on top of that, she was still probably a little bit immunosuppressed from being treated for cancer during the past year. And she just, it was a really rough recovery. So it was nice that we were able to share a little bit of it. But she would have, you know, she was miserable. She couldn't be there. I hardly missed any shows I've ever done because she booked most of them when I was younger in Uncle Tupelo. And then I don't know if she's ever missed other shows than those.
In Chicago.
No, she's at every show. It's in my heart.
Is she going to be able to make it here or no?
She will be here, yes.
That's wonderful to hear. This is kind of a big question, Spencer, but over the year of touring with Tweety, You graduated from high school. You took a year off from college to be a rock musician on the road. How did that go?
I think it went pretty dang good. The past year was really, really great. We got to do a couple trips to Europe, a couple trips around the country here, and I hope we get to do it again. It makes sense that I've got to go to school, and that's a great thing that I'm super, super grateful for. I get to go to school for sure. And Wilco, you know, Wilco's dad, my dad gets to do some more Wilco stuff too. So, I think it went as well as I could have hoped for.
I'm happy that he was able to take the year off and travel around playing songs with me, and I look forward to making a lot of music in the future together, because we have a really, really incredible dynamic playing together. And we didn't just do this record, we made the last Mavis Staples record together, and whether it's Tweety stuff or working together on someone else's record again or something, I know that we're good, you know, collaborators. So I know it's going to happen. But I also think there's an opportunity at this age, and he's, you know, really good in the academic environment, and there, you know, he can go and get some guidance that he wouldn't be able to get anywhere else but that world, and I'm looking forward to seeing what that does.
I try not to think of it like it was one finite year of really, really fun stuff. Even
well, that would be devastating to think of it that way.
Really, I mean, it would still be a miraculous, wonderful privilege. But yeah, I'm trying to, even if it's a long time down the road, I'm trying not to think of this as just one little blip, you know. Trying not to think of it like that.
Our guests are Jeff and Spencer Tweedy. The Solid Sound Festival is at Mass MoCA this weekend. So the wonderful, wonderful comedic actor and author Nick Offerman directed a music video for you guys.
Yes.
And he loves you. He wrote a thing about how much he's in love with you, Jeff Tweedy.
We are engaged.
The end.
So how did you meet him? Because you were on Parks and Rec also, but did you know Mr. Offerman before that? I can't call him Nick. I don't know him.
Yeah, Nicky, baby. No, I didn't know him before I was invited to be on Parks and Rec. I don't know how instrumental he was in that decision. I know that there were some writers that had written a character and they kept thinking of the character as me or visualizing him as me until they finally just said, why don't we just ask him? And that's how I got that part. But, you know, Nick and I hit it off and we maintained communication in the time after that, and at some point I asked him if he'd ever directed a rock video or a music video, and he said that he hadn't really, and the immediate response was, shall yours be the first? I think he had, though, which is weird. I think he had done something, but anyway, so he helped, you know, he came to Chicago and we did that in a weekend and got to be, you know, really good buddies and have, you know, our love has just grown since then, you know. And I was like, yeah, the chapter he wrote on me in his new book is, I can't read it because I my face gets so flush, I get so embarrassed.
First time you'd made a music video, Spencer, or no? Had you done them before?
Yes, I think it was.
Well, that's weird. No, it's not necessarily true. Not really a music video, but he had done a Funny or Die clip at one point, and he was a walk-on extra in a movie that I don't think ever came out with Jeff Garlin.
Okay.
Yeah.
He played a freshman.
Played a cute little freshman boy in Sin Bin. And then we also, real deep cut is, the band that I play with my friends called The Blisters was in a Quaker Oatmeal commercial when we were 9 or 10 years old.
Directed by Errol Morris.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your life is a little bit nuts. In a good way. All good ways so far. So speaking of producing other records, this week Richard Thompson's album Still came out. Yeah. And how did you come to produce that? It's beautiful, by the way. I loved it so much. How did you come to work on it?
Well, many, many years ago, we met Wilco has played with Richard a few times over the years, but we really got to know each other on the last, on the Americana-rama tour, the Dylan tour. It's embarrassing to say that, but
that's what it was called.
That's what it was called. I didn't name it, but yeah, we got to be, you know, we played together on the tour. We invited him up on stage and, you know, got to hang out a little bit more and he plays it a little close to the vest, so I really didn't.
He's British.
Yeah, I told him every day that he was my best friend, and he would just laugh at me. I'm serious. I did. I was like, you know, you're my new best friend, and he would just laugh at me. I think it was really awkward for him to hear somebody say that. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, at some point he reached out and asked me if I'd be into helping produce a record, and I was interested in that. I think he liked the Mavis Staples records and felt like that I was a producer that would be very sympathetic to allowing his thing remain intact, and just maybe help him get, you know, everything that goes into making a record to go smooth and hopefully make it sound really great. But I think he felt like I was sympathetic to an artist like himself and Mavis, and, you know, just allowing those things to be what they are without putting a sonic signature on it, you know.
So I saw a video of you, Spencer, online with these beautiful blue drums. I want to get not that I know much about them, but we'll try to get a little instrument geeky. Can you tell us about how you choose your instruments, what you like about a drum kit, what you look for in your set?
Well, the drums that I play with Tweety are CNC drums, which is a company based out of Kansas City, Missouri. It's a father and a son that make all their drums by hand, and they're really, really, really great people, and they're really nice to us, and they make great drums. And you probably see them on TV all the time because a lot of drummers are using them these days. But as far as what I like in drums, I basically just like drums that can achieve something close to what drums sounded like in the early 70s, which is like really not in your face, really, or like kind of modest and lightweight. And that look really, really cool. But yeah, I don't know. I only recently started getting geeky about drums because, I don't know, they're so expensive and I'm so young for the most of my life so far. I've just been like, I've got this one kit. Why would I ever need to look at or think about another drum kit? But that's changing pretty fast.
His mother had a drum kit that he inherited, and that was pretty much the main drum kit for a long time. And
it's still my main drum kit at home, and I record with it.
Yeah.
It's a late 60s Rogers Holiday Blue Sparkle.
Sorry. It's an old Rogers.
But the snare is a Ludwig snare that has the same exact wrap.
Similar question then, Jeff, about choosing instruments. When you've been a musician as long as you have, do you have, like, have you had a guitar that you still play that you've had since Tupelo or before, or do you get new stuff frequently, and how do you choose it?
Oh, boy.
I can't admit to getting new stuff frequently because it's plausible this might be heard by my mother.
She knows I get new stuff frequently. I do. I love guitars, and I've collected them for a long, long time. And even in high school, the band before Uncle Tupelo, we would manage to make a fair amount of money playing these, I don't know, dances, for lack of a better word. Nobody danced, but we had money. We didn't have any overhead. We didn't have anything to spend it on but guitars at that time. And it kind of, you know, started out before I graduated high school, even with the, you know, handful of nice guitars. And over the years, I don't know, there's really, I mean, I love so many guitars, it'd be hard to single that many of them out. But there is an a 30s Martin 018 that I've used on almost every record in some capacity. It's all over the low record I produced. I bought it when I was getting prepared for the Mermaid Avenue records, and I didn't feel like I had any record. I mean, I didn't have a guitar to write with that felt like, that sounded like Woody Guthrie to me. And so I bought this littler guitar that sounded closer to me through his records. And I fell in love with it, and it's magical. I don't know if I've ever heard another guitar sound exactly like it.
And then do you play different instruments recording versus live?
Yeah, I don't really care that much about matching the instruments to what I played in the studio. Sometimes you need different things to come across live. So something you used in the studio, well, for one thing, in the studio, a lot of instruments, you don't have to worry about them staying in tune and under hot lights and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can't really take them out of the studio because you get to tune up in between every song and whatever. But so you have to have really sturdy guitars live. I take a lot of guitars because I use a lot of different tunings, and it's easier to kind of keep things living in a different tuning. So they, you know, the guitar gets used to it and stay, it's set up for that tuning. We're going to get, bye everybody.
I was just thinking that this is awesome. I wish that we could do every interview about gear.
like people are driving, like falling asleep at the wheel. We feel like we're going to be liable.
No, people will at least pull over to take a nap, I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, they won't be turning off.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything about the Wilco timeline that your team is putting together?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, and it was is a project that was put together by Deb Bernardini and Crystal Myers at TMM, and it's amazing. From what I've heard, there's this like amazing outpouring of remembrances and memorabilia from our fans and from our crew members and people involved with the group, and I can't wait to see it.
And I can't wait for the festival, which is very soon. I'm so glad you guys are back. It's great to see you. Thank you for fitting me in today.
Our pleasure. Good to see you again.
Thanks.
The Solid Sound Festival is at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. For more information, visit solidsoundfestival.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.